Hello and welcome. This is the LCU Podcast, a podcast that brings stories, insights, and people from Lubbock Christian University. I'm your host, Keegan Stewart, and I'm happy to be with you for another episode. On today's episode, I sat down with Dr. Monica Hill and Dr. David Fraze talking about their brand new book, out today, Practical Wisdom for Families with Athletes. Winning isn't the ultimate goal. Dr. Monica Hill is an associate professor and the master's program coordinator in the Exercise and Sports Science Department at Lubbock Christian University. She has worked with K-12 and college students and student athletes in Texas and California for more than 17 years. Dr. David Fraze is an associate professor and endowed chair of youth and family ministry at LCU. He has served for over 35 years working with adolescents and families in church, school, and athletic settings. He has spent the last 15 years working with coaches, student athletes, and athletic families on performance team dynamics and character development. On the podcast, we talked about the idea that brought this book to life, various different subjects that are found within it, who needs to read this book, and so many different ideas regarding sports in 2024. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Monica Hill and Dr. David Fraze. Thank y'all so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
I want to start with you, Monica. This book, it's featured around athletics. So let's learn a little bit about your background with athletics, and then we'll go to Dave and do the same.
Okay. Well, way back in the day, my eligibility has been up for a while. I ran track and I played basketball in college. And really, my athletic career started when I was about 4 or 5 years old, gymnastics. Then I went into basketball and did all the things. And one of the things that I realized very quickly is the adults in my life seem to be huge fans of sports. So a lot of the conversations in my life were about, hey, what about this? And are you playing this? And what are your times going to look like in this year? So it's my whole family. I mean, athletes. So it was kind of hardwired into me in an early age that that's kind of what you do.
Right on. What was your favorite, basketball or running?
Track prepared me for everything. But I would say gymnastics really prepared me for everything. But track, I would tell anyone, run track. If you want to improve your agility, your speed, by strength, run track. But basketball, because it's indoors.
Right.
Living in West Texas, the wind can be rough.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
What about you, Dave? What about your athletic roots?
Well, grew up in Louisville, and football was king, so I always liked football. I was told by my mom that I played baseball when I was in elementary school, but I guess I don't remember that. I've been around baseball a lot, but I don't like little balls coming at me. I'm a slow pitch softball king. I played all the sports in middle school. We did soccer. We were able to play basketball. I was on the A team because I was big, but I knew I wasn't going to do very well because I got excited one time and scored on the other person's goal. So that was short lived. In Texas, everybody's a two-sport athlete, so I was in track and actually ran when I was younger. I ran the 400 and ran the 200. I think the 400, Monica, is one of the that's just a head game. That is an awful race because you're basically sprinting the whole time and you're staggered. I didn't really enjoy that. Tried hurdles once. That was a disaster, but did everything. Pretty athletic in that situation, but by the time I got to eighth grade, I focused on football and track and did really well at Louisville there. The guy in front of me was 6'6", went to Baylor. I was barely 6 foot, so I got to play a lot and enjoyed it. But I felt a call to ministry. Instead of going to play at the next level, I would have had opportunities at some D3, D2 schools, but came to Lubbock to pursue youth ministry and didn't really get sports out of my system. And probably played intramural a little too tough. We have some coaches around here. We had some great games, and I guess I was a bully. I didn't, you know, they always tell me bad stories of things that I did, but really enjoy football. And then I kind of left it for a while, but had an opportunity to coach football at LCS for 6 seasons with Hutch, and then laid off for a while. But probably about 15 years ago, started coaching again while I was working in youth ministry in Dallas as a performance character coach, and worked with Richland High School for a number of seasons, and now work with Friendship High School, and it is great to be around the sport. I have spent time around baseball and things of that nature, but I think Monica will tell you it's fun being older and still involved in sport and seeing kids that you've coached from middle school to high school, seen them in college, walk them through that, now in the pros. It's just kind of a weird, surreal deal, but you learn a lot. And recently, most of my summers, I work with the Cowboys Youth Academy. So I spend time in Dallas teaching young people how to play football and now teaching girls. Monica didn't know this. We're starting to teach girls how to play flag football because it's going to be a 2028 Olympic sport.
Yes, very cool. It is.
So the Cowboys are like, we're helping girls get involved. We're starting leagues. And I did my first flag football Saturday, and they're a lot easier to coach than guys, Monica.
Go figure.
They want to learn, and they're so nice, and they don't have attitudes, and they're athletic and frightening. So I think it's going to be really cool for girl athletics.
Hey, I play flag football too. I forgot about that one.
Let's go get really the Olympics.
Right on.
It's pretty.
2028. Let's go.
And you know, a funny story. At Tech, when I was at Tech, in grad school, Dr. Mark Lockbaum, he kept some of us after class, sports psychology, and we thought, why are we here? Well, he figured out that he had a bunch of former college athletes in his class. He recruited us. We ran the table in flag football and basketball, co-ed basketball, and football, flag football that year.
Yeah, he did.
He still talks about it.
A dynasty.
Yes.
How about
that?
He
has the trophies. We didn't get any trophies. We got bragging rights, though.
And so, Monica, for you now in your profession, working here at Lubbock Christian University in the exercise sports sciences and everything that you do for that department, how would you correlate that work to what you do for athletics, for how you help prepare future physical therapists and occupational therapists, and where athletics comes into that? Because you might not work in athletics at LCU, but athletics is certainly a component of what you do and what you train and how you help prepare.
Well, my expertise are in the mental performance things. So sports psychology, exercise and performance psychology, those areas. And what you find is performance has two arms to it. There's the physical aspects of it, which if you've been in sport, you pretty much have that side on lock, the physical aspects, the bigger, faster, stronger. But there's a whole nother side of it, and it's the mental side of the game. How is it that we coach mental performance? And I mean, how is that we coach the physical side of it, but we ignore the mental side of it? And really, that's where I see the breakdowns. They're good at the X's and O's stuff. They're good at the physical stuff. But the breakdown comes when they have to fail, navigate failure, or navigate that they are about to transition out of sport, either voluntarily or because they were part of a deselection process. Those are the areas where they were injured. So that's the part where I really see the need and the vacuum, or even knowing who they are without sport. That's really the crux of my dissertation and the crux of my own struggles with sport, in particular the transition from sport and the people in my life. Who am I without it? You don't know, because you don't prepare for the inevitability of I tell them, sometimes I start class with this phrase: your performance in competitive sport is terminal. It has an end date. But that doesn't mean you're afraid of it. That means you run two things concurrently. So to answer your question, I mean, that was a long ways around, but the mental side of it is the part that gets most athletes. It's not the X's and O's.
That's really good. And one of the chapters in this book, Why Transition Matters. And I especially enjoyed reading that part, and I actually want to get back to that a little bit later. But let's start with the book, okay? It comes out today. That excite y'all excited about
it's
that?
It's exciting. Oh,
very.
Y'all been waiting a while for that?
Yes.
So where did the idea of this book, Practical Wisdom for Families with Athletes, come together? Y'all both work at LCU. Y'all known each other for a long time. What sprouted this thing?
Well, you need to tell your side, because I'm going to tell a little cleaner, probably. But she felt like she was taken advantage of a little bit, weren't you?
Short of it, I mean, is it Christian to say I wanted to put him in a chicken wing?
I think you can say that. That's fine.
You can't
That's
do it. Go ahead.
A holy hug. But so we go, he's my content expert in the whole dissertation process. And at the end of this thing, at the end of the dissertation, the defense is done. We didn't have very many questions about the dissertation process itself. like no questions about the stats at all. It was really when you're going to write a book, you need to do something with this. Mm. And so I finished the dissertation. I'm done writing for a while. So I thought, well.
But it was your professor, though. Let's be honest. She said on video, we have this recording, when are you and Dr. Frey's going to write a book?
She did say that.
And she did. So I just asked you for your CV. It kind of started like that, right?
It did. He asked me for my CV, and I thought, okay. Well, the next thing you know, contracts start flying between Dwayne Anderson, who was amazing, published a leaflet. They're just incredible people, he and his team. Well, contracts start flying, and I happen to ask the question, when is this manuscript due? Well, you know this man.
Mm-hmm.
He starts giggling, hi. And he says under his breath, 90 days. Well, he can't whisper. Anyway, so like 90 days as in 3 months.
We had to get it out because COVID makes everything go longer. And she had fresh material.
Yeah.
And it was really great. And it kind of goes back to how we met at the very beginning. We realized we kind of been doing the same thing. And we spoke each other's language and we looked at sports the same way. And for my angle, studying adolescence and sociology and being involved in that and then being involved in sport, from a different angle, we converged. I mean, she's over here on the one scientific side. I'm on the other scientific side, and we converge and say, okay, athletics is broken, and we were both kind of trying to fix it. And friendship just like that.
Yeah, but not to cut him off, I mean, we're both applied people too. We mm-hmm. don't like – theories aren't good as, okay, we need to roll them around, but how do we move it from here to application? That's mm-hmm. how we're wired. You don't just sit here and play with it because athletes need something tangible that they can do, mm-hmm. which was actually the birthplace for the book. Also, we're very much applied people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can sit around and talk about it in theory all day, but it doesn't do them any good.
And they got to be able to read it. So this is the third book in a series called Practical Wisdom, and it kind of is very simple. It's written like a quick start guide. Mm-hmm. When you get a computer, you can be a geek and run through all the instructions, or you can just plug the thing in and you have a quick start guide. And we realized there was a lot of athletes, coaches, parents who are so busy in athletics, they just need a quick start guide and something that they could go back to and something that had resources that they want to dig deeper. And it really kind of came natural. We realized from our conversations that I think our first meeting, we had all of our chapters mm-hmm. and we just had to get used to each other's style. And we broke it up and we would write one and we would grade each other's work and go back and forth. And we had so much application. We had a story at the beginning, story at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And being involved and knowing the coaches we did and players we did, it just really came natural. We joke about the 90 days, but it was a labor of love. And we were able to say things and we had peers read it that, there's a lot of performance books out there. And if you go on Amazon, this book is listed with How Do You Do Performance for Young Athletes? And we're very transparent. This book will help their performance, but that wasn't the labor of love behind it. It is bringing athletics back to the way it should be, because the uniqueness of this product, I think, and I'd ask your input as well, is everybody talks about how can we get the most out of them. And they even kind of toy with this idea of mental development, but it's for the outcome on the field. Mm-hmm. And why this book helps, it also helps the outcome in life. And we're very straightforward of you will fail. You will have to hang up your shoes eventually. What happens then? And that was kind of the uniqueness and fun part. So it came kind of easy. And yeah, we got it done real fast. We had to do some editing when she was in Houston and different places. And I was in Jordan this time last year trying to write in a different time zone. That was fun without internet. But I mean, it was a great project, I think, to be involved in.
So on the day you completed your dissertation, a day that's supposed to be filled with relief and victory, that was the day you learned you had more homework, Monica.
Oh, absolutely.
That is the irony. That's bizarre.
Yes.
Hey, but now it's done. Today it's out. Today it's out. We'll tell you where to get it later, but that is a wonderful
She loves
story.
Me now. It's all good.
I loved you then, but I mean, you still needed a holy hug.
She did.
So that y'all just hinted at it, but the subtitle here, winning isn't the ultimate goal.
Well, because as we talk about this a lot, I mean, sport, if you allow it, can teach you some life skills.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is how to fail. But if you look at the nature of competitive sport and what it's been distilled to, it speaks to an outcome now, and that's to win. And I reference a song, "All I Do Is Win, 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 No Matter What." It's the no matter what piece that is getting us in trouble. Because what happens is the person in the athlete, in the performer, is usually the part that's sacrificed for the sake of an outcome. And that's the part that we address a lot in that book. At the end of the day, you still have to be able to walk away, but you have to walk away knowing who you are. And that's the tough thing, because athletic identity tells you you are a thing, and that's an athlete. Well, who else are you? Because that's only going to sustain you for so long.
And when people hear that at first, I mean, you're looking at two very competitive people. It's not that, okay, and please hear this. This isn't like some kind of weird everybody gets a trophy, because we don't believe in that. That's a whole different podcast, because that itself is damaging. We want people to compete at the highest level because that's the right thing to do. And because of our faith, that's the right thing by faith to do. You do the very best you can at all that you do. But we have seen adult peer pressure, where kids are getting hurt because their parents can't give them an off season. Parents, I just was approached by this recently, where parents pay tremendous amounts of money, and at the end of the day, they still have DNA to deal with. If a kid is 6 foot and they're playing against a guy who's 6'9", sorry, you know, I mean, there's going to be something that's going to go into play. And it's not that kid that can't play, but he may not be the certain role that he wants to be. But there's a lot of people commoditizing this idea that we can get your kid a scholarship, we can get your kid to the next level. Some of that may be true as a tool, but we kind of return back to the idea of, who are you as a person? Who do you go to for assistance? Go to the people who are not being paid, who can give you advice if you do need to pay for something. And I'm telling you, it's just upside down. Parents are buying into, like, for instance, I'm going on a little tangent here, but kids have access to their own videos and can put those out there for scholarship offers. But there are people that go to a parent and say, pay me $1,000 and I'll make your kid's video. I don't know of a school at whatever level who the kid doesn't know how to make their own video, because everybody's using the same video equipment. Right. And that's just part of the racket, that we've commoditized kids' sports. So instead of helping them become better athletes and help them have that experience and win games, it's like, we can make your kid a winner. And it's out of balance. Is that safe to say?
Absolutely. And I think Joshua Weiss was onto something. The person behind the movie, Bobby Fischer, I think he was onto something, because if you win and you're a winner, then you lose, you must be a loser. So we want them to be able to have a healthy relationship with sport. For me, I'm tired of running postmortems on athletes or something that was supposed to. We brought them in with fun, with friends, and now they're broken. So for me, that's the heart behind the book. I mean, as David just pointed out, our faith won't allow us to do anything different but to consider the whole person. And there's a person in that athlete, and they shouldn't be sacrificed so they get better or bigger, faster, stronger.
That big shift, it has changed a lot even in the last 10 years for what these athletes are growing up experiencing. What started that? And not that there's only one answer, but it's changing quickly before our eyes, and that's some of what y'all are addressing here.
Well, sport is culturally popular in and of itself. And so culturally popular things tend to get money and attention and some of the other thing focused on it. And so I think it's just a byproduct of being culturally popular, especially in, and it isn't just culturally popular sport on a global front. You can go to any area and you find a sport that's culturally popular there. Like here, football is king. He just said that. So in this part of the world, it isn't just sport in and of itself. It's also, what sport are you playing? And it's, how do I make inroads to do this thing? Kids are pretty sophisticated. They figure out very early on what matters to adults. Well, in a lot of cases, I mean, I ask this in class, what are the two subjects that you're told to avoid? Well, they're like, oh, faith and religion and politics. What are the two topics that are usually safe? Sport and weather. So, I mean, there it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live in a culture that, I'm just going to say, there's a lot of fear. And if a kid has an ability, I've seen families that have used all of the retirement, their money that they were going to save for kids, because this is how they're going to go to college. And the stats don't prove that out. No. D3, by the way, is totally non-scholarship. It is just academic scholarship. but they'll support it. Like my kid got a scholarship. No, they got an academic scholarship to play at a D3 school. It's not athletic. D2, D1, the numbers are the same. They haven't changed. And again, going back to size, just from a football coach perspective, if a kid is 6'9", they may pick that kid up to see if they can make him a player and give him a little bit of money. Well, if you're 5'10 and you're the starter, you may not got to get a scholarship.
Right.
They're looking for body types. They're looking. It's a machine. Mm-hmm. And the strength and conditioning programs in today's, especially college, is incredible what they can do to try to transform. And there are some people who are working on mindset, but it's still, they are cogs in a machine. Mm-hmm. And so if you follow the money, you know where, I mean, Jesus said it, where your money is, there your heart is also. The NIL money, the amount of, you know, oh my word, when kids get, you know, out of college, they could have millions of dollars offered to them. And that's not very much. And a lot of people think, well, why do they get so much money? Well, think about how much tickets are and how much the owners are getting. The owners are getting a lot. So you're dealing with a lot of money, a lot of cultural pressure. And so parents believe some ways this is my kid's ticket out. And they forget who they are. So a kid stops. And when there's a lot in the news, this goes back to what Monica was saying. They stop playing. They don't know who they are. So they're beating their wives or they get hooked on drugs or they do stuff like that because their whole identity has been caught up in chasing this. Mm-hmm. They get the brass ring and then they're cut. Yeah. And so they don't know who they are. And we have story after story after story. And some of that'll, some of those voices of people who've been caught up in that are actually in this book, in The End Matter. I will say one of the adult peer pressure is huge right now. We've been stopped. We were stopped one time out here on campus.
He set me up, Keegan.
Oh, I did. We do that. Oh. To be fair, she sets me up too. But we love kids. We love sport. And where there's brokenness, there's opportunity to minister. But people know that we're connected. So they come up and say, how do I get my kid to this next level? And there's really not a shortcut. And they want to know, well, do I need to be in this program or this program? And we say it in the book, they choose programs because the program's winning, but you're like, you may win a state title, but you don't play against anybody. So sometimes it's better to say, go over there and do the grind, let people see you. If you want to play to the next level, they'll find you. And that's still true, Monica, when you believe. I don't care if it's
that is true.
Whatever it is. If you're good, people will find you. Now, here's something that I heard from a AD recently.
Just incidentally, that is biblical. Find a person's skill in their work, and they will work for kings and not common people.
That's amazing. It's in the Bible.
So, yeah. I mean, it's right there.
It's right there. A lot of stuff you'll find out's Bible-based in there. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, just read the book. It's kind of like the Bible stuff. We're living in a town in Lubbock, Texas, where we have more national championships in track at Texas Tech and at LCU than any other sport. Mm. And it's never mentioned. Mm. I want you to think about that. That goes back to what Monica was saying. Football is king. And so millions and millions of dollars, and right closely to it, is basketball. Mm-hmm. And think of the money at both of our schools that go into basketball, go into football, basketball, stuff like that at different places. But our track programs in this city are incredible, and you wouldn't even know it. At Tech and LCU both, you're like, I mean, we're talking, we have Olympic athletes, but you wouldn't even know.
Right.
Because you got to follow the money. And I think when kids, I'm going to say this, somebody's going to be mad, but when little league kids get rings made of gold because they won an 8-and-under weekend championship, somebody needs to call that into question. Rings are for national champions. Rings are for state champions. And you're like, why are we pouring so much money into this?
So what's the parent peer pressure you mentioned?
So one of the places that I start, and it was evidence in this particular situation mm-hmm. that he was talking about, I asked the parent very candidly, is your kid playing for you or because they want to? The parent, it gave them pause, like mm-hmm. they were surprised. But let's just take the book, for example. Two of the hardest, the funnest and the hard, most challenging chapters for me to write were identity and parenting. Mm-hmm. Because identity and parenting to me go hand in hand, especially when you're talking about youth athletes. So for any parent, I would challenge them to ask themselves one question. Why do I want my kid to participate? Because they need to reconcile that before they even start. Because if they can't reconcile that, then I would dare say I would probably push back on them. Is your kid playing because they want to? Or are they playing because you're pushing them in that direction?
Because what they'll hear is, if your kid's not on this team, if your kid's not on this level, then they're not going to have a chance at another level. You know, as a high school coach in this town, I hear all the time, well, everybody knows who's going to start by the time they get to their freshman year. We haven't seen students, and we got three high schools. And, of course, the junior high coaches say stuff, but every year they got to go through the same process.
Sure.
And there's this big assumption that there's this underground. And I realize in some places, I mean, I'm old, I've been around a lot, that there are more coaches who understand the game a little bit better and yada, yada. But going back to square one, if a kid wants to be involved and they have the ability and they'll listen and they're coachable, they will be seen. But parents have this idea that if my kid's not seen here and they're not playing, then I'm going to go to another school. And there's stories. We know parents have gone to two or three different schools.
Mm.
And we say it in the book, if your kid can't succeed at one of these big schools, it may not be the coach's fault. It may be time to understand your kids at a certain level.
So who needs to get this book? Parents, athletes, coaches, mm-hmm. all of the above. Who would y'all recommend get their hands on this first?
You were doing a good job. Keep listening.
But that's the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A high school athlete would benefit if their perspective would shift if they read this this mm-hmm. summer.
And it matters. If they come from the kind of programs that we've been attached with, they'll find it very familiar, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I've never been blessed to be in a bad situation. I mean, I've been around some pretty good coaches. I know some coaches that are kind of difficult, but the staffs I've been a part of have been really good, and they understand a lot of the concepts because they're older. And some of the people who spoke into this book, and I think one of the uniquenesses is the end matter. We ask student athletes, we ask coaches, we ask players, we ask scouts, we've asked ADs, some of the ADs in the area. It's amazing what they would say, and they're all saying the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when you know you have a good product. So,
and some of these people don't know each other. Have never heard of each other probably. Mm-mm. And it's coming down to the same thing.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, a couple of the folks were like, if they had to do it all over again, they would have thrown their kids into more academic opportunities because they're more academic mm-hmm. scholarship than athletics.
Right.
Well, hindsight being 2020, now they're able to share that. It doesn't benefit them because they've done it, but they're hoping that it will bless someone else. Just sure. saying that. And again, I mean, it seems like our hypocrisy knows no bounds, Keegan, but we love sport.
Mm-hmm.
We love it in the purest state of what sport was supposed to be about. And that was supposed to be about fun and self-expression. I mean, the nature of play. You ever watch kids play? They cheat. There's no rules. They change mm-hmm. them.
Right.
I mean, and we're not saying we go out there and do that, but it was very athlete or very participant-centric. Well, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, we've gotten away from that.
And we got the old voices. And I'd love for you to read here in a second. There's a Mark Roboto page that mm-hmm. we thought the quote was really good. But, you know, I've been surprised at when people have read this. They'll call and they say, like, an offensive coordinator that I work with is like, this is great. People need to hear it. And I'm like, well, tell people. We got some great endorsements, but a parent on Sunday, I was doing a camp and it was amazing. They're like, coach. And I said, yeah. He goes, where can I buy this? And I gave some to some of the coaches who helped participate in the in matter of the book. And I said, you can have it. And he goes, well, I'm three chapters in. I can't put it down. And this is what I need. And because it starts with balance. And some of these families really want to hear another voice that is backed up with people who played on very high levels, administrators at very high levels, to say, this is really the essence of sport. Let's get back to it. And that was the God thing, I think. Don't you think, Monica, that all these voices, when we had some ideas, but then God brought these other voices around and said, this is a good thing.
Kind of affirmed it for y'all.
I believe so.
That's really cool.
He gave us a place to land all of this practical experience mm-hmm. because these are conversations that we've had with people. Anything you read in that book is something we have shared with someone or multiple people over the combined
world.
What, 45 years?
40. Yeah. I don't That's know. Crazy. Why are you looking at me when you're saying old?
I'm asking.
I wish this was video.
Yeah.
I'm the one with the gray hair.
The book really addresses a lot of different topics, 13 different topics, in fact, that matter. That's how the chapters are titled. Balance matters, coaching matters, go through the whole gauntlet. Fraze, I want to talk to you about conflict. And Monica, I'm going to mm-hmm. get to you on that transition that we hinted at earlier in the book. But conflict, I found that mm-hmm. to be a really interesting chapter because I personally have observed conflict for my generation being an area of great struggle. Mm-hmm. People don't like it. Mm-mm. People avoid it at all costs. When people find themselves in it, they don't know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. And a line in here, conflicts can and should be managed to a productive conclusion. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? What does that look like in 2024?
It is so important that we do it. And it goes, because we can handle conflict, and I say as adults, we're the ones socializing our kids, is they don't have very much grit. Mm-hmm. They can't agree to disagree. It has to be somebody else's fault. When we got in trouble at this table, someone would call our parents, and our parents would say, thank you. Today, it's like, well, what happened to the other kid? What's going on? Why are you treating my kid unfairly? And so we thought it was important to say, here's how you deal with conflict. And it starts with a real life situation that erupted in a really big Texas high school football game I was a part of. And I had to pull the kid off the field because my head coach said, pull the kid off the field. And the parent was right. It wasn't fair because our kid needed to be on the field with their player. But the parent handled it right because they voiced their concern with me. And I let them talk. And I said, here's the deal. We're concerned about him playing next week. And you're right. And everything calmed down. They calmed down because we were being vocal with each other. They didn't go out of control. They went to the adult. They talked to him straight. I told him the situation. They, when their emotions settled down, they realized what was at stake here. And the kid ended up being an incredible athlete and helping us the rest of the semester. So you, one of the things to do for conflict, you'll see it in the book, is our students have to know how to handle their own conflict. So a kid's going to come home, and this is going to be a shocker if something happens at school and a coach said something. I literally had a conversation like this 15 minutes ago with another coach. And they're like, well, this such and such yelled at me and they're awful and they kicked me out of the weight room and all this. I said, well, have you talked to the coach? And so what the book kind of helps us do is, how do you process conflict? Most coaches have 24-hour rule. Don't go yell at them after. Just wait, set up an appointment. But the first thing you need to do is have your kid, coach your kid up to go talk to the coach. Teach them that life skill. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, just read the book, there's an escalation to it. But what we have a tendency to do, and I've seen this over and over again, is instead of going through the process and us owning our own feelings, what we do is we skip the coach, we skip the head coach, we skip the AD, we go to the board. Mm-hmm. We want to get people fired. We go to the media. We assume things. And if you, and part of the conflict too that came out, and I think Monica, I talked about this during COVID when everything was real quiet, and I've been doing this for a while, but you really heard people in the stands. That's why we have a whole chapter about being a good fan. People are talking about things, first of all, that they don't know, and they're violent and they take it personal and they really do believe that people listen to them. But the fact of the matter is they don't. There's a dance to this. As a coach, we get to talk to the refs. The refs get to talk to us. We get to talk to the players. And if the conflict is entered in by anybody else and you have a problem, then your kid needs to talk. Y'all need to go together. Y'all, you know, but there's so many assumptions because we just take our kid's opinion of it or what we see with our eyes, and we don't necessarily understand what's happened. Mm. There's always a different side. Does that?
Yeah, that's how many times, hey, I'm really frustrated with so-and-so. Well, have you talked to him? No. Mm-hmm. Why not?
You know, happens all the time. So my kid's not getting playing time. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. My kid's not getting playing time. Well, has your kid asked the coach, what can I do to get on the court, get on the field?
Right.
And sometimes the kid, it goes back to DNA, especially how you go, well, you're not even 5 foot, and this other kid's 6'6".
And it may not come down to DNA. I mean, there's a chapter in there called Responsibility Matters.
Ooh, yes.
And it may come down to, is your kid doing the work? I mean, because, I mean, there, we also have to understand that there's an entitlement mindset. Like if they've been given everything at home and they just expect that carryover. Well, it doesn't carry over. Did your kid do the work?
And you're also going to hear, this goes back to the pressure. And again, while we wrote the sport, wrote the book about sports, is there are coaches that you pay that will say your coach is wrong. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. I've heard it. Mm-hmm. They're like going, well, your kid's great. Well, guess what? Ask somebody who's, you're not paying to talk to you about your kid's performance. That's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Because they are getting paid to tell you you're good. They're getting paid to keep you on the team. I'm not saying everyone. I know a lot of select coaches that are very honest that say you're wasting your money. Those are great. But as we say in the book, In Coaching Matters, you need to ask your school coach or your position coach who they recommend for this next level of training, because they know them. They know the ones that are in the racket that are good and those who are bad. And so there's a lot of that you're hearing. So you're going to hear a lot of chirping. Girls sports, bless your heart. I did softball 1 year, and girls have their dads, their moms, their select coaches, a whole series of them, and their coach on their team. And there's a lot of conflict at times when they don't respect the coach on their team at the time. They'll say, well, my select coach said, well, my pitching coach said this, well, my batting coach said this. Well, you're on a team, and this is the only coach that matters right now. But that goes on a lot, too.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, it takes a level of sophistication to manage all the voices, and I'm just afraid that some of our athletes aren't there yet.
Mm-mm.
They don't know where all of the stuff should land, where they just need to shelf this and take this piece of feedback and apply it. They don't understand that. They don't have that degree of sophistication yet.
Well, for a 16-year-old, you can't blame them. Well, this coach told me do it like this, but I'm hearing right now to do it a little differently. You know, that's dynamic.
But they're living out of the consequences of that.
Sure, right.
Because let's go back to, again, one of the first reasons we wanted to write this book is before they get to high school. Some things sort themselves out by the time you get to high school, because kids are older, and by that time the kid starts to understand, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, and they push back a little bit. But youth sports today, Keegan, when you see an adult yelling at a young kid, it is the same as shaking baby syndrome to their brain. They are not developed enough to separate who they are from what they do. So what we're seeing is kids that put their entire love and appreciation and acceptance from the adult world is, I can run a ball, I can hit a ball, I can catch a ball, I can run fast, therefore I have value. But when somebody starts yelling at them, it shakes them up. They're like going, my dad doesn't love me. And we hear parents say what all the time, well, we're teaching our kids character. That's not how character is taught at all. When you're older, you're going to see coaches yell at kids. And I think it's appropriate, as long as they pick up the rock, that if you raise your voice at a kid, and the coaches that are good, I've seen it, and I know it's great, it means that they know they've taught that kid and that kid's made a decision to do their own thing. That is a very good coaching technique to say, you're not listening. And you did something that cost those around you something. But you got to be old enough, as she's saying, to separate who you are from what you do. That your choices had consequences. And it happens in team sport all the time. In her sport, basketball, if somebody just keeps dribbling the ball and scoring, there may be somebody over here that's totally left out. And you could have won the game if you just would have fed the ball. Well, that's something that I'm not so sure a young kid knows, because up in the stands are like going, well, he scores, why didn't you give her the ball? But in high school, it becomes different. Is that safe to say all that?
Yeah. Monica, I'm going to ask you a question that you could give an hour and a half response to that I'm going to ask for a shorter response to. So I apologize for that. You said earlier it was literally the content of your dissertation. So I understand that. But transition matters. Mm-hmm. And I can sit here today and say, I can tell you a time in my life where I struggled with my identity when I transitioned out of high school sports. I know friends who did struggle after college sports. Mm-hmm. You said earlier, everyone can relate to this. So what do you tell somebody when they come to you and say, I don't know who I am anymore. I have to get a job. I'm not a college athlete. I'm not a high school athlete anymore.
I had this conversation with someone not too long ago, and they were struggling with transitioning. And I said, well, how long ago did you start playing your sport? And they said, well, 4, 5. I said, okay, so you've been in it for about 18 years. There was a lot of skills developed during that time. And every last thing that you learn is transferable. And you start having them make a list. Like, what did this teach you? Okay, where's the time you had some conflict in this sport? What did it teach you? And then you show them in a business setting how that would look. Or whatever their major is, how it look.
That's good.
Like, everything you've done is not a waste of time. It is a transferable skill.
Mm.
But then take them through the cycle, too. Give them permission to grieve it, to mourn it. Like, yeah, there's a loss there. There's a loss of something that was very important to you, but that wasn't all that you do. So my hope really, Keegan, is when you transition, is we start having the conversations early on. There are swatches of schools across the nation that are starting to have these and building them into life skills programs and stuff in the NCAA, because they realize that transition is such a huge part of the athlete's life and they need to be prepared for it. So they have transition programs. It's part of the curriculum. So
that's great.
That is a huge piece of the puzzle. But transition, like anything else, is connected to identity. If you really just boil down what is identity, it comes down to a couple of things. The first one is, how do I see myself? The second one is, how do I think you see me? And then the last one is, how do I feel about those two things? That's the nature of identity right there. So whenever you start hearing a person, when you ask them, so what do you play? I am a. Mm-hmm. Well, they're telling you right there, this is how I see me. This is how I think you should see me. And I'm going to feel some kind of way about that if you don't see myself. Well, when I hear a bunch of I am statements, I start thinking and start asking questions that give them to consider an alternative. How am I going to leave this thing? If this thing that you have poured all of, invested all of this energy into, can no longer feed you, what's the other thing that can take up that slack? And those are conversations that they start wrestling with. But this thing can also inform what kind of person and professional you want to be. You cannot tell me you aren't disciplined. You got up at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. to go to practice. You have 3 a-days. You maintain XYZ eligibility, so you cannot tell me that it didn't teach you discipline. And then, oh, I never looked at it that way. Well, yeah.
That's awesome.
But transition is such a critical piece of it, and I wish I had time to unpack more of it, but transition really comes down to telling them that you give them permission to do something different. And I don't think they've ever been, in a lot of cases, given themselves or been given permission to be something different.
Wow.
And this is one of our first conversations almost 8 years ago, is that the three questions Carl Jung says it's kind of set in adolescence is, who am I? Do my choices matter? And where do I belong? That's exactly what she just went through. And adolescence is lengthened. And for an athlete, it seems to lengthen a little bit longer. They may look very, mature in a lot of ways. But one thing she found out, and I'm going to just brag about Monica. She was the first one to go. She took a D1 model and put it first one to look at D2 athletics. But what she found out, and what I found very interesting, is athletes will foreclose their identity formation for an athletic identity. So they're supposed to be answering those three questions that she just went over. Who am I? Do my choices matter? Where do I belong? And if it's been framed solely through athletics, you have to help them transfer these skills into real life because they haven't been translated that way. And some people are catching up with it. I think some of our stronger D1 programs are starting to say, hey, we need to help them transition because they're starting to see the aftermath. And if they go to the next level, I hate to say, some pro sports teams, it's more about controlling damage when we give you a bunch of dollars, and they're not mm-hmm. necessarily transferring them out of athletics. But I'll tell you the things, and she's had the same conversations. I'm not going to tell you the players, but some of the players that are in the league, that are in MLB and stuff like that, what I say to them, and I know she says the same things to those athletes, and I text them, I talk them, I look them in the face and say, remember who loves you apart from your sport. And they'll look at you and they remember that. When they have adults that come alongside them and say, you are Monica, not basketball Monica, not track Monica, you are Monica and you are my friend. Monica will go back to that person. And, you know, even though we didn't play at a professional level, we have players that'll come back because they want to see that in our eyes. You know me. And just that, because who I am.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
That's one of the things that we tell them is, we're a fan of all of you, the offstage you, the offline you, because so much of the attention they get and the applause is connected to what they do. And we just want to be there for them, for the person that they are. The person, and really a lot of the conversations I have with the athletes I work for that aren't even about sport.
Mm-mm.
It's not to say I don't touch it, but it's way over here. Because the investment is in, who did God call you to be? And that stretches into eternity. Your jump shot is going to fade. Your 40 time is going to slow. your RBI is going to stink at some point.
I still got a great 40 time.
Dave's still fast. Right. So after I finished this, I really was like, holy cow, if I have kids someday, I'm going to really emphasize to them if they want to play sports, if they want to do it. I'm not going to make them. But emphasize the importance of playing more than one sport. That mm-hmm. showed up multiple times throughout the course of this book. We all do a couple of minutes on why that's important. And is that happening, like in Lubbock, Texas?
I am seeing kids probably specialize earlier and earlier in some cases. And some of that, too, Keegan, is because, say, for instance, you have an athlete, a little person who's a budding athlete. As Dr. Huggins points out, there's really no middle ground anymore. Mm-mm. They're too athletic for recreational, and the family isn't willing to commit thousands of dollars, if not more than that, to play select and travel ball. So they have to make a choice. Do we just keep doing all the recreational stuff? Or do we do the select? Well, if I do the select, I can only afford to really do one. Well. Or one camp connected to that thing, so I'm going to specialize. So you're starting to see some specialization that was birthed out of the models broken. So where do they go? And really, if you look at the long-term athlete development plan, which is the system that feeds, that's the talent development system or model that's used by every competitive program, it's broken into quadrants. The first quadrant is called fundamentals with FUN capitalized. Well, that's 6 to 9 years old. Well, what we've done, us on the performance side, is we went to people like Doc Fraze and we said, oh, child development specialist, when are they most malleable? 6 to 9, they can follow instructions, they can start doing things, and we can start making them super athletes. We can program 6 to 9. So if you look at most youth sports, they start around 6 years old. Mm-hmm. That's because his research has told us that's when we go get them. So then we go from there. And then the next quadrant, then the next quadrant, then the next quadrant. But by quadrant 3, they're specializing. Wow. Well, that's only, 16 years old, maybe? 13?
And it's...
There's a lot of science behind it. So it isn't just that we're just trying to figure this out and we're just, like, pulling strings and guessing. No, there's a lot of science behind what we do.
And, you know, probably one of the biggest examples, I think, is in track and field. You go to Jamaica, and I went there recently not to research sports, but there was an ex-runner there. And they told me, you probably don't know this, Monica, but in elementary school, they do races. And the Jamaicans have the fastest people in the world. I mean, their sprint relays are stupid, right? But they go through selection processes from elementary school. Mm-hmm. Because they know exactly what she talked about from quadrant to quadrant.
It's like China and gymnastics.
It is.
The model works.
Again, you'll win. But again, we're going to say in this book, Pushback at What Cost, the athletes that we know that have made it, that have stayed, I would say even in the pros for a length of time, a lot of them, and this is why you hear pro athletes say it, let them play everything. Let them play. Let them play. And I'll go ahead and say his name. Trent Grisham was a kid who played every sport. And he made the varsity team as a freshman in football. He's the only kid that I've ever seen by the sophomore year. We were like, you probably just need to play baseball. By that time, he only played on one select. And this was his choice. Sophomore year, Tech recruited him. Junior year, he played for under 18 Team USA. And then he was a first round draft pick out of all of Dallas-Fort Worth when he was 18. That's the only athlete I ever know that went through that process. And he wanted to play everything. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because he'd be hurt. It wasn't that at all. He was the greatest team athlete just because that is a freak, weird thing. But he played everything up to this sophomore year going, okay, you're a unique talent. And that was from coaches who were around him going, you're a unique talent. But that's the exception. And I please hear say that's the exception to the rule. For the most part, and I'm going to say this guy too, Hud Hutchinson, who was our quarterback at Friendship, number one passer in the state of Texas. He's going to K-State. Now, Matt Wells, who was at Tech, and people listen to this who know who he was, recruited him. He's actually going to be competing for a quarterback position. Hud's a baseball player. Mm-hmm. He loves playing catcher.
So was Patty Mahomes.
Yeah, they wanted him they wanted him to graduate early and to start learning the offense in January. But Hud wanted to play baseball with his friends one more time. And guess what K-State said? D1 school. Absolutely go and do that. Because they know it brought him joy. And schools are starting to realize, happy athletes, kids play, let them play the stinking game. Why is Patrick Mahomes throw off his back foot? And again, he's a freak, right? People aren't supposed to have their back.
He's throwing the football like it's a baseball.
But he enjoys it. Everybody around him, and I have a player that plays around him, they just enjoy him. He's fun. He's kept the fun of the game because he got to play and be a kid. And, yeah, winning is a big thing. They get paid for that. But you come across players, you're like, they're playing a game. And they understand that platform, and they're healthy role models, I think.
Plus, sometimes you may have a late bloomer.
Oh, absolutely.
So just let them play everything, because it could be a late bloomer. You may have them specialize too soon, and then the thing that you didn't think they were going to have any skills in, well, that's their thing. I mean, they're late bloomers.
We had the biggest lineman I've ever seen. He's 6'9". He wanted to play baseball as a freshman. I was at Richland. We're like, you can go try out, but you can't do this anymore, because he didn't have the flexibility. It was kind of fun to watch him play. But he finally realized, I really like football. I mean, it is a late bloomer deal. You don't know.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Keaton, one of the funnest things to watch is you go to these big track meets, especially like the summer games of Texas or something. You see these multi-sport athletes at these track meets. You see them warming up, these young men warming up. You see them running down, and then you see them break off into a route. So they're warming up for a relay, but they're running routes. Yeah. It is so much That's fun cool. to watch.
That's really cool. Dave, one of the chapters toward the end, 5 things to know before playing football.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that chapter important? Because football and its perception has changed in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you feel you needed to put that in there?
It really started probably about 2-3 years ago. The guys I was working with in Dallas, I'm like, we really need to write something. And seeing kids come into middle school in particular, the beginning of 7th grade, when they start, they just weren't ready. Something was off. They didn't understand things. And I wanted to be proactive. So I thought, well, I'm going to ask a bunch of people, you know, and collect those. So we actually had a lot of that collected before I, you know, talked Monica into, I still think it was more above board. When I tricked her into writing this book with me, because she's so awesome.
He didn't talk me into any.
When I gave her the contract, told her to sign it. Now she's happy. Those are guys, a majority of them played in the league, or they've been coaching a long time. And it was good stuff. And it's basic life skills. It's stuff that you should learn from sports. You know, show up early, be coachable, take failure. You know, don't just because you get coached hard, don't go home and tell your parents that people hate you, those kind of things.
Don't be reactionary.
All these things. I mean, that in and of itself is really good. I mean, just if you have a kid about to start playing football, and I'll just say this, I'm Texas High School Coaching Association. So I'm part of this group that there's rules and regulations, there's UIL, don't just because this goes to development for this sport, and I think probably any sport, you know, just because you've played peewee football and you won that ring and stuff, it's not the same thing when you start playing with coaches. And I'll just say for our high school coaches all over the nation, if you ever look at how much they make for doing this, it's less than $1 an hour. I mean, the time they put in on this, they don't get paid to do this. That's why I love Interscholastic, and that's why the AD of Ector County with Midland and Permian and all these places say, concentrate on that interscholastic sport, because our coaches, for the most part, are really good people, girls and guys alike, because they're not, they love it and they love the kids, and it's not just for money. Yeah, there are exceptions, but part of that chapter, it's what started kind of the whole process, is I just wanted people to know this is from experts, people who coach and people who played at high levels do this first.
Okay, we're going to do something fun before we get to our last couple questions here. So we're going to do a giveaway. The book comes out today.
Yes.
And y'all have been kind enough to say, hey, we're going to give one away to a listener of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to participate in this special book giveaway, Dave and Monica have come up with a trivia question based on the conversation we just had, that you can go and answer. The way you answer it, go find the Facebook post that's promoting this episode, or go find the Instagram post or Twitter post that's promoting this episode and comment your answer there. We'll keep our eyes on it. Dave will declare the winner. The question that they need to answer.
Okay, I'm going to ask this one. When Monica signed the contract to write a book with me, she wanted to do something to me. There's two possible answers to this.
Yeah.
Can we say that, Monica? Two possible answers.
Two possible.
Multiple ways to win. There's multiple ways to win. Awesome. So that's perfect. We're going to keep our eyes on it. Go comment the answer on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram where you found this podcast. That'll be a lot of fun. So that's fantastic. Monica and Dave, is there any final words you would like to share about this book or the process of the book before we wrap up here?
I'll let her have the final word, but I want to say, as an author, I'm not a very good promoter, and I got rebuked by Monica and the publishing company. And then they used my theology against me and all my youth ministry training that I'm dishonoring God. So I don't want to dishonor God, but I would love, we would love people's help. So we feel good about this, the message of the book. It has some great endorsers, but the great way that this book gets out to the public is, if you like it, would you please comment on it on your socials? Would you comment on Amazon in particular? Leafwood right now, today, is like 40% off if you order the book through Leafwood. We want to get this book in as many people's hands as possible. And we'll say, for us, it's not to make us great. We don't need pats on the back. We're old enough. We're very secure. We love what we do. We just want this message to get out. So please help us. Get on your social channels. Tell people about the book. Give it to an AD. Give it to your coaches. We want this message to get out. We think it'll be helpful.
You know, ministries come in various forms and fashions. And to me, I look at the book. I've been staring at it a lot while we were doing this podcast. And it's a ministry. And that's what it really comes down to for both of us. And in particular, one of the ways that we get to glorify God is the work we get to do by loving people. Mm-hmm. And to us, we have this opportunity to talk to people to help them reevaluate their relationship with sport. Sport isn't going anywhere, but we really want people to enter into it in some very healthy ways. So,
and we do for our friend Mark Roboto.
Yes,
we gave him his own page, and I really think you should read that. Out of all the quotes we got, we're like, this is really good, don't you think, Monica? Mm-hmm.
So here we go. Play for the love of the game, for the fun, for the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Not to get a scholarship or make the all-city or all-state team or even be the starter on your team. Play to get all the wonderful experiences and emotions only sport can give you. Play so you can feel alive. Mark Roboto. That's well said. And I'll say, as a reader of this, I loved it. Thought it was fantastic, thought-provoking. Made me reflect on my own experience and think about those around me who I see participating in sport right now. So where Amazon, Leafwood, that's where they can get it.
Absolutely.
So go
and get the ebook is, I think we got an email. The ebook is
available
immediately.
Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Barnes & Noble for the ebook. Fantastic. So yeah. Go get it today. It's Practical Wisdom for Families with Athletes. Winning Isn't the Ultimate Goal. Dr. David Fraze and Dr. Monica Hill. Y'all, thanks so much for having this conversation today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
This was a blast. Thank you for listening to the LCU podcast. Send this episode to someone else who you think will enjoy it. Leave us a like, rating, review. Go get your copy of Practical Wisdom for Families with Athletes today. Thank you for listening. God bless.